Welcome to Keeping It Real with Frankie D, an Italian, the very first Italian-American podcast in the home of your Italian-American moment. I'm your very proud host, Frankie D, and we can be heard at ItalianAmericanLife.com, on iTunes, Stitcher, your podcast app. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and connect with us on LinkedIn, and check out our new YouTube page. Today, my guest is Joe Farina, the Director of Communications and Marketing for the new Dick Biondi film. Joe, welcome to the show, and thanks for being here today.
Oh, thank you very much. It's an honor and a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you.
And this sounds like a really exciting project. I'd like to give a little background for our younger listeners who might not be familiar with Dick Biondi. I am, but I'm a little older. Dick Biondi was born 1932 in Endicott, New York. He was a disc jockey. Original screamers, which we'll get into what that exactly means. He had a six decades long career. He's one of the most influential radio personalities of the 20th century. Something that I found really interesting. He's credited as the first U.S. disc jockey to play the Beatles on Chicago's WLS 890 AM in February 1963. With the song, which will be a nice trivia question, Please, Please Me. He's a rock and roll pioneer who introduced Elvis Presley, Jerry Lee Lewis, Bobby Darin, and many artists, not only on the radio, but at his sock hops. He's a member of the Broadcast Hall of Fame and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So he's quite a figure in the radio world.
Yes, he is. Wow, you put that beautifully.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I was a little nervous talking about it.
You're good. You're good.
Okay, we talked about screamers, he's one of the original screamers. What does that mean?
That's somebody, that's a disc jockey who is just really out and about, loud and outrageous, just kind of out of the box. He was just full of personality, full of energy, and just kind of maybe in a subtle way, kind of a little instigator and things like that. You know, they were a little bit more liberal in their approach and their style, and they had a little bit more freedom to speak and talk how they may. So he was among the first DJs, way back when to kind of really get this ball rolling on the, this kind of style of radio broadcasting.
And he probably started his career 1950, 51, 52, correct?
You're close. I would say just a little bit later in the mid 50s. As you mentioned, he's from Endicott, New York, and I forget how old he was, but he had other intentions. He wanted to there was one point where he wanted to be a priest, believe it or not.
And is that right? Wow.
Yeah, he did. Yes.
That's kind of a different genre, no? Priest to disc jockey.
Yes, that's very true. And then what happened, he had an opportunity to read on what they call a spot, which is like a commercial read on the air in his hometown. And that was it. He got the bug then. And once he kind of around the time he graduated high school, that's when he started pursuing his radio career. He started out at these stations near Endicott, New York, also in smaller markets in Pennsylvania. And then his big break is going down to Alexandria, Louisiana in the mid-50s. And he was one of the first disc jockeys to play rhythm and blues music on the radio. And considering the climate of America at that time, for somebody to do that, especially in the South, playing, like Fats Domino and a lot of the African-American artists that were coming out, he was among the first to really play those records. And then eventually he moved up to the advent of rock and roll came when he was at Youngstown, Ohio, and that's where he met Elvis Presley. Then he moved down to Buffalo, New York. And as he was going through these markets, his career was really starting to blossom. And he was really influential on the early careers of Elvis, Fats Domino, Bobby Darin. He and Bobby Darin, believe it or not, were very, very good friends. And so Dick was really, you know, and his personality was starting to, you know, he was starting to create his own style and personality, that kind of out and loud, energetic kind of DJ. But if Dick Biondi played your record, you know, back then, you know, the atmosphere and the dynamics of radio now are much different than back then. But if a DJ like Dick Biondi played your record, odds are it was going to be a smash hit. And that's what happened. And in 1960 is when you find Dick Biondi at WLS in Chicago. And he was the number one disc jockey while he was there. And he was the first disc jockey to play a Beatles record in the U.S. That is a fact. And it was in February of 1963, Please Please Me. And then after that, he moved on to KRLA in Los Angeles in the mid-60s. And that's when the British invasion was really at its height. If you go and listen to the Beatles record at the Hollywood Bowl, you can hear Dick Biondi introduce the Beatles at the Hollywood Bowl. So his, and he's an Italian-American. He grew up in an area called the Knob in Endicott, New York. So he's a very, very proud Italian-American, proud of his culture and his heritage as well.
And he went by the Wild Italian.
Yes, that's
right. Did that come about in Chicago, or was that something that he had come up with years before that?
I think by the time he got to Chicago, he was that. You know, you're talking about those DJs that were kind of, you know, kind of out there and just kind of off the wall. And I think, you know, when Clark Kent goes into the phone booth and turns into Superman, I think when Dick Biondi went into that radio studio and got behind the microphone, he became the Wild Italian.
The Wild Italian.
Yeah, yes. That personality and style came out, and teenagers were really attracted to it. It was, you know, the audience, somehow, some way, his style really connected with teenagers. Really,
and did. I think also what younger people don't understand is a disc jockey in those days, that was a powerful, huge position, because you were the link to the public and music. So like you said, when Dick Biondi played your record, that meant something. You know, there was that was the way you heard music. There was no downloading. This is, you know, what young people don't get. There was no internet. There was nothing to do with that. It was strictly the radio. So this disc jockey and DJ, but not the DJ that the young people know in the nightclubs, a disc jockey and the radio, that was a major thing. And he was one of the best and one of the most well-known. And he really could change someone's career.
That's very true. You know, just going back to, for example, you know, the Beatles, Please Please Me, when he first played it on WLS, you know, that was, you know, right before, you know, a year later, the Beatles broke out and became the Beatles we all know and love. So this is a year before the Beatles really kind of came on and changed all of our lives. And in our film, we have a lot of amazing artists talking about about their admiration for Dick Biondi, but also talking about, you know, for example, Tony Orlando, and we also have Brian Wilson talking about, you know, we took our records to Dick Biondi, and Dick was just so just very open and just very welcoming to these artists. Played their records on the radio, and they became smash hits. And, you know, in 1960, WLS, you know, they had the biggest, you know, maybe that was the station. I mean, you can hear it all over the country. Sometimes in Europe, you know, if all the, you know, if everything aligned correctly. So it was a powerhouse of a station. You know, it wasn't just this kind of small, you know, can only reach.
You know, I got to be honest, I didn't know that.
Yeah, oh yeah.
WLS in Chicago.
Oh, you can hear it everywhere.
AM all over the country?
All over the country because of its transmitter. It had the biggest, if I'm not mistaken, it had the biggest transmitter at the time. So the, you know, the radio waves went all, you know, went all over the country. And these artists in our film, they talk about that. I said, well, they remember hearing Dick Biondi on the radio, but they lived in another state, or they were, they were in another state on vacation or visiting relatives or what have you, like in Texas or Florida sometimes. You know, Tommy James, we just interviewed him about a week ago, and he says, I remember Dick Biondi so well when I was growing up. I listened to him all the time when I was growing up in Michigan. He said, boy, I mean, that guy was the guy. And this was before Tommy James, you know, became Tommy James. So the influence Dick Biondi had on broadcasting and the careers of these amazing artists that we all know and love are pretty amazing. And yes, if you know, you could take a record to a DJ at that time. You know, there was no, you could just hand it to them. And DJs too, like Dick Biondi, they used to work at sock hops as well. They would have these sock hops and these dances.
Which, if you could, just for the young people, what's a sock hop?
People dance to music in the gymnasium in their socks. Simple as that. Simple as that. Yeah. And Dick Biondi would come to these sock hops, and you can meet with him and talk with him and take pictures and everything like that. So very, very approachable. Nowadays, you know, much, much different. Landscape is much different.
You mentioned he had a good relationship with Bobby Darin, who, if people don't know, is a fellow Italian-American that was an incredible talent. If I'm not mistaken, I mean, obviously he was a singer. He was an actor. Wasn't he a songwriter as well?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And and Bobby Darin, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, legend has it, or, you know, whatever one thinks of it, but his song, Mac the Knife, is like considered one of the greatest jukebox songs of all time. An incredible, incredible song. And he was just an incredible talent that, unfortunately, if I understand the story, was born with a heart ailment, I believe. And his life expectancy was not very long. And I believe he died in his 30s, unfortunately.
Yes. And if just to kind of add on that, earlier this year, we had on a gentleman named Jimmy Scalia, who is the Bobby Darin archivist and historian for the Bobby Darin estate. And he was on the show, and he was just giving out, he was just talking about these amazing stories and facts about Bobby Darin. And yes, Bobby Darin was a singer, a songwriter, a fantastic actor, a showman, just all around Italian, a talent. And he was an Italian American. And if I'm not mistaken, I think when he was young, I think he had a bad bout of rheumatic fever, I think. And I think that affected his heart. And he lived to be maybe in his mid-30s at the most. I could be off.
Yeah, I believe you're right, about 35.
Right around there.
37 tops.
Yeah, but what he did in that time was pretty amazing. And Dick Biondi and Bobby Darin were very, very good friends. And early on in his career, is when Bobby Darin and Dick Biondi met. And because Dick Biondi would help all these artists get their records on the air and just connect and build these relationships and build from there.
And since we're on that subject, before we get into the film and how this all came about, if I may add that you, Joe Farina, are the son of Dennis Farina, the actor from Chicago, who originally was a Chicago policeman and got into acting at a much older age and was very successful. And I can vividly picture your dad in Midnight Run. He was a hell of an actor.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I taught him everything he knew. he was a when he got out of the Army in 1967, not long after that is when he joined the Chicago Police Department. It was towards the end of 1967. And he worked his way to becoming a detective and primarily working on, burglaries and robberies, jewel thieves and things like that. That was kind of their, their forte. And in the late 70s, It was 1979, 1980. Michael Mann, another fellow Chicagoan, was directing a film called Thief, starring James Caan. And the gentleman, one of my dad's former police friends, colleagues, what have you, a couple of them were involved in the film. And Michael Mann, including my dad, and Michael Mann asked my father, do you want a small role in the movie? And my dad said, sure. And next thing you know, a year later, I'm sitting next to my dad at, I think it was the Gateway Theater in Chicago, or was it
The Gateway Theater is on Milwaukee and
Lawrence. Lawrence there in Jefferson Park. Yeah. Sitting next to him, right? So we're going to go see this movie that I'm in, Thief. And I think I am maybe 8 years old at the time. I was young. And I'm sitting next to him, watching him on the big screen. And for somebody who never had acting lessons, somebody that never had had done acting before on TV, theater, or what have you, he had some pretty good screen time. It's like, oh my God, Dad, you got some pretty good screen time. And the best part I think about that movie is, and of course I'm biased, is towards the end of that film, because there's a shootout between James Caan and these Robert Prosky, who plays a mafia leader. They have this kind of shootout at the end, and my dad's the last one to get shot. And it's very dramatic. He's kind of doing. They're shooting my dad. I was like, Dad, you got shot. He's like, no, it's pretend. Pretend. But anyway, after that, it just, every year it got a little bit bigger and bigger in terms of roles and things like that. And then by 1985 is when he retired from the Chicago Police Department, because in 1985, he got a co-starring role in Manhunter, Code of Silence with Chuck Norris at the time as well. And then to top that off, they said my father got the leading role in Crime Story.
No, he was a natural. You could tell, and he was excellent.
Thank you.
If I may say, I see a little resemblance.
I get that a lot. I get that especially when I get a little bit older. I have two older brothers. And, they kind of, out of the three of us, people will come up to me the most and say, you look, just like your dad, and you sound like your dad and all that stuff. And that's not intentional. It's just the way I talk, the way I look. But I think the older I get, the more, even my wife will say that, she could kind of see that. So
that's very cool. Very cool. Very proud. Yes. Okay. Dick Biondi film. How did this come about to make a Dick Biondi film?
Sure. The Dick Biondi film was the creation of Pamela Enzweiler Police, who is the director and producer of the Dick Biondi film. She started this project about six and a half years ago, putting the project together, putting a team together, and then going out and putting the story together, getting all the interviews and all that. I came along a little bit later in the process. I came along about 3 years ago. Pamela and I met through a mutual friend. We were, oddly enough, we were in my old neighborhood, Jefferson Park, at the Copernicus Center. Dennis Tufano, former lead singer of the Buckinghams, another Italian-American,
yes,
and Gordon Tech graduate.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, was doing a concert fundraiser. And a friend of mine was in town helping out with the fundraiser, and she asked me if I wanted to go. I said, are you kidding me? It's in my old neighborhood. I love that. I love the Buckinghams. I love Dennis Tufano. I'm definitely going to go. To make a long story short, I met Pam through a mutual friend, and she was telling me about the Dick Biondi film that she had been working on. I said, wait, That Dick Biondi, the one out of, that I remember, my generation would remember Dick Biondi at WJMK or the oldie station in the 1980s. I'm a big music fan. I have been since I was seven. And then I, you know, around that time, 7, 8 years old, I started really getting into radio, listening to the radio. And one of the first voices I heard was Dick Biondi. And he was playing all these great rock and roll songs, and he was energetic and out there and just full of life. And I just, and I became a big fan of his. So so I put everything together. I said, boy, Dick Biondi, music, film. Pam, I want to help you out with this film. I want to be a part of this film. I want to help you get to the finish line. You know, let me do, you know, with my background and experience, let's work together and let me focus on the communications and marketing and promotion, sponsorship aspects of the film. Because we're in post-production. So basically what that means is all the main footage is done. So now we're focusing on editing, putting the story together, sound, images, sound bites, all that stuff. And so we work closely we have a great team, small team that, we all work together, and Pam does a great job. And right now, if everything goes according to our plan, the film will be released sometime in 2021. And we have several PBS stations interested in airing the film. Markets that Dick used to work in, Buffalo, Youngstown, South Carolina, that's where Dick worked in the 1970s. But mainly the big one is WTTW in Chicago. They're very interested in airing the film. So we're really, really happy about that.
Okay, two questions. One,
yeah.
You know more or less how long the film will be?
Be about an hour long. It'll be about an hour long. That's for PBS and TV purposes, about an hour long. I think when we get to film festivals, DVD, and so forth, we might be able to be a little bit more liberal, meaning that we can probably extend the time duration of the film a little bit. But for TV purposes, it'll be about an hour long.
Okay. And also, right now, if people just want to find out a little bit more about the film, how would they do that?
Several ways. Number one, go to dickbiondifilm.com. That's the official Dick Biondi Film website. Check it out. There's a lot of fantastic stuff on there. Follow the Dick Biondi Film on social media. We have an incredible Dick Biondi Film Facebook page and Facebook group. Pam and I are always posting something every day related to the film, Dick Biondi, all those magical memories from way back when. And lastly, subscribe to our YouTube channel. We have magnificent clips from the film, but we also have incredible clips from the Rock and Roll Show with Pam and Joe, which is a side project that Pam and I have been doing since the pandemic began, where every week we interview a famous entertainer or musician. And it was just kind of our way of staying connected with our fans and just kind of giving people some entertainment while the pandemic is happening. Last week we interviewed Tommy James. Next week Gary Lewis will be on. We've had Joe Mantegna on. We've had Dennis Tufano, Tony Orlando. All those clips are on the YouTube channel. Check that out and subscribe.
Well, that sounds awesome. And I can't wait to see the film. 2021, the Dick Biondi film. I'm looking forward to it. Joe, it was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much. I wish you much success with the film. Dick Biondi Film, The Wild, I Trail It. Can't wait see it.
All right. Thank you.
All our listeners out there, all our Italian Americans, as I always conclude everything, stay proud.